Welcome to Hitmakers Exposed. These are raw, uncensored conversations with hit songwriters, artists, producers, musicians, entrepreneurs, and music business experts who have all hit the big time. Hosted by the Songwriting Academy, home to the most successful music faculty on the face of the planet, with over 1 billion record sales between us. We know the way, we go the way, and we show the way. So the first question, Mr. Medway Smith, is why music? Why did you choose music? Did it choose you? Why do you do it?
That you took the words out of my mouth there. It chose me, I feel, you know. I was a teenager, kind of meandering along, didn't know what to do. And music was always a constant for me in my life, playing in bands with my mates, buying records on the weekend, going to underground East London nightclubs and getting down every night of the week. And I was like, music is what I do. This, even though I wasn't making any money for it, I was trying to find a path, and I was like, wow, every time I turn around, music is in my face. This is what I do. So yeah, it chose me. That's why.
Love that. What is it? You know, I mean, you've been doing it as I have for a shit ton of time.
Yeah.
Does it still have the same magic for you?
Oh man, I had a one-to-one today with somebody. And it was and the one-to-ones are fantastic because they're also reminders for yourself when you're advice, giving people advice. And this came up, and I said, I'm even more excited, inspired, and motivated now than I was at 18. It grows. And yeah, man, I mean, I am so excited about all parts of the industry that I navigate, from new music to new machines that are made to make the music.
Yeah.
I mean, every single day I wake up and the first thing I do when I'm having my coffee is see what the latest pieces of equipment are that came out, or plugins, you know. This stuff just keeps me going.
Yeah. What do you prefer? Do you prefer writing the songs or creating the tracks, do you think?
For me, they're one in the same. Creating tracks could, what comes out of creating a backing track could just be a pre-chorus for me. And I'm always putting my ideas down, recording them in some way. And whether it's a whole song or eight bars of something, they're one in the same. They're bits of songs always, constantly. And writing songs in the traditional sense for me is rare now. It used to be a really common thing for me. I was signed at Sony Publishing for 14 years, and part of my day-to-day was going into the studio and collaborating with other people at the publishing house. But that doesn't really happen now. It's changed the way we're making music. You know, you're there, I'm here, we can write a song together. And it becomes more, my role has become more laying down the backing tracks for top liners or artists to come and take ownership of a song.
That's really interesting. What's your process then for creating a song, let's say from scratch? Mm-hmm. What is that? What does that process look like on a daily basis for you?
But that's not easy to put into one way, because I've developed a process for myself that could come from lots of different angles. And this concept from Martin Gore from Depeche Mode, who, in my opinion, is one of the best songwriters to come out of the UK ever. And Martin and I worked really closely together for years and years and years. And he would come up with songs, and then I'd go out to Santa Barbara in California to help develop the songs further. His idea was the initial seed, and then I would get involved. And so I'd always be turning up after the event of his initial idea. And I would say to him, Mark, you know, how do you come up with these ideas? What was the first thing you did when you wrote that track? And he said to me, I just turned to the nearest thing to me at that moment in time, and I go. It could be a piano, could be a guitar, could be a synthesizer. And I thought, how can I relate to that? What? Because I wouldn't go to the nearest thing to me at that time in my career. And I looked around me, and I was surrounded by synthesizers, drum machines, percussion instruments, guitars. And I thought, I'm going to try this. And then my process became what it is now, over many years. And I go to the nearest thing to me, but often it's a machine. And I'm really into these machines that they're not just synths. They're kind of workstations in themselves. There's a machine called an OP1 made by Teenage Engineering. It's like a whole studio in this tiny little machine. I'm into things like that, and I'm surrounded by them. You know, I live in two places, and both of my places I live are surrounded by machines. So I took Martin's concept and I applied it to my environment. And that's my process, you know, and often it's my phone now. You know, I've just been in Marseille, and I've been walking around with that phone and record for days and days and days. And I'll go through those recordings, you know, some of them of me singing, some of them of people walking past me in the street singing. And I might just take a tiny piece of one of those recordings, throw it into a sampler, and off I go. Loop it up, pitch it down, speed it up, slow it down. You know, twist the recording in a way that it doesn't resemble what it started out as, and use that as a jumping off point, as a piece of inspiration.
That's brilliant. I love that to bits. So, you know, my next question was actually going to be, you know, where do you get your inspiration from? And it seems like you get it from everything, right?
Yeah. I'm really, really interested outside of music in architecture and nature, big time. I know you're really into nature. You get down in your woods at the back of the garden, and it gives you inspiration, right? You're out there, you're doing your thing. Could be nothing, just being outside. And I'm really interested in modernist architecture. It started at the end of the 1920s, and it went through to the 50s. People confuse it with minimalism, but modernism was about living indoors and outdoors as best as you could. So I was in Marseille, and I went to a really famous building by a guy called Corbusier. And I was walking around this building, and it was just so inspirational. Just being in the building made me feel brilliant, and it gave me so many ideas. But equally, you know, the next day I spent the whole day sitting on some rocks by the Mediterranean, and I was jumping in and out of the sea all day. And that equally gave me a lot of ideas and put me in a space within myself, which gave me the room to create.
So are these when you say these things give you lots of ideas, are they musical ideas or are they lyrical ideas? You know, how involved with the lyric do you get?
Yeah, it could be a lyric. It could be something that I said to someone or I overheard somebody saying, you know, and I could go really deep into that. What does that word mean? You know, words are really powerful when you think about the things you say to somebody. It's the same with music. You're saying something so, it has so much weight to it if the intention is there. Words are super powerful. So yeah, it could be a lyric, which like I said, you know, I might record the environment that I'm in and take a tiny little bit of it as inspiration. It's the same with words. Could be something that I said to someone and then I'm like, what did that really mean? And then there could be an entire story, narrative come out of just that sentence that you had to say. What did it mean when I said that to them? And why did I say it? Already you've got a verse and a pre. And then when you've got your verse and your pre, it leads you somewhere into a chorus. What didn't I say in that verse and that pre? What still needs saying? There's the chorus.
What do you think makes a great lyric, you know, a lyric that touches people, or a great song? But what do you think is the magic element to it, if there is one?
I think there is. I think it's the intention behind it. You know when someone means it and when they don't, you know, and that's I see that as the intention behind something, the authenticity of what's being said, and the intention is, for me, that's the magic. And you can smell it a mile away, can't you, when someone's writing because they've been told to, or they're writing because they really do have something to get off their chest.
Yeah.
Good and bad, you know.
How much of when you're working with artists, with other writers, how much do you find yourself weaving your stories, albeit discreetly, into what you're creating with them?
That's a good question. I guess it's like a conversation in a way, writing a song with someone or helping someone to write a song. It's like a conversation. It's, this is my experience of that. And by sharing your experience of it, that person can either see a way out of it, if it's a conversation, or if it's a song, they see the way to lead them to the next part of the song. So I think, yeah, my life, what's the words I'm looking for there? My experiences I've had in my life weave their way into everything I do, be it alone or with someone else.
Yeah, you and me both. I find it impossible not to go there. Really. I'm such an open book.
Have you
knowingly touched like someone with your music? Has anyone ever sort of approached you, or have you ever heard of how something that you've created has either helped somebody or changed them? Has that ever happened to you?
It has. And I've got a very difficult relationship with compliments. You know, when someone's saying how my music has touched them or it's helped them, I'm so happy to hear it, and it's the reason for doing it, really. When you're sharing your music with other people, for me, that's the reason to do that. And I find it really awkward in myself to take those compliments. So yeah, it's happened. And yeah, I'm almost feeling awkward about telling you about it. I had someone come up to me and say, you know, my first album was like the soundtrack to their meeting each other. They used to go home and listen to my record at night after they've been out. And then they got married and they came to see me play. Well, I was playing with Depeche Mode, and they came to see them play because they knew I was in the touring party. And they wanted to tell me that they got married after meeting through my music, and that they played their music at their wedding. And it was like, wow, man, this is blowing my mind. But at the same time, I was really awkward about receiving that information, you know?
That's so interesting. But isn't that beautiful, though, that a relationship, you know, probably happened because of you. You were instrumental in that relationship, and then maybe a little baby walking the planet now.
Maybe,
because you've had something to do with that. I mean, that is mind-blowing.
It's a trip, right?
Really is. Jeff Franzell told me of someone on a plane. He told them one of the songs he'd written, which is a song called Never Saw Blue Like That. And it was in The Runaway Bride. And she went, oh my God. She said, I sing that to my baby every morning.
No way. Wow.
It's just like, wow. I mean, we're privileged to be able to do this. And you know, I maintain this one that the most amazing art forms, because we deliver something that you can't hold in your hand. Mm-hmm. It's a collection of frequencies, and yet it can help change and save people's lives.
Yeah, it does. It saves people's lives. It's amazing, isn't it?
Going back to your process, how patient are you with it? Do you find that you have to be patient with it, or do you just go, fuck it, I'm just gonna?
I've become really patient with it. Yeah, there was a time where I'd get frustrated if things weren't coming, and go around in circles and get nowhere, and end up closing the door and feeling like it didn't work out. It was upsetting, you know. I failed that day because I didn't deliver something. And then I looked at my process and the way that I create, and I became really comfortable with ideas not coming. And when I surrendered to that, all of the ideas came. And then they never went away again. They never went away. This comes up in one-to-ones quite a lot from time to time. People are like, how do you overcome writer's block? And that was it for me. I went for a few months. I was like, oh, I can't write anything. Oh, my God. And I'd sit down and I would try different instruments, different pieces of software, different rooms, different environments, and it wasn't coming. And then when I finally went, it's all right, it's okay, man, it all started to come back. And it could even be sitting down in front of a piece of software and finding a sound. Could be like, what sounds do I like? Bing, 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 blah, 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 da, 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 da. Oh, I like that one. Got to go. That for me meant that I turned up and I did what I said I would do, even if it's a second long. I turned up and I was there, and I'm all right with that. if it's 1 second or if it's 1 hour of sound that I've captured, it's fine. And when I realized that, the ideas never stopped. Like I said to you earlier on about being inspired and motivated more now than I was then, it's the same with creating. It doesn't stop. It just keeps coming, you know?
Yeah. And then there's the crafting side of it, because, you know, I think the inspiration for hits happens in a heartbeat, but mm-hmm. the hits takes a bit longer and a bit more TLC to actually get them to the point where they're going to be, where they are going to be massive records and life-changing records, you know, for mm-hmm. the listeners and the creators of them. I'm the biggest pain in the ass to write with, because I worry songs, you know, I'll worry them afterwards and say, could it be this? Could it be that? And I'll always be thinking and offering up alternatives. What kind of writer are you? How much rewriting do you like to indulge in?
Tons. Loads of it. You see, you know, the way that we're making music now, there could never be an end to going back on a song. You could spend 10 years going back on a song. And I really, really am prone to that. Oh, yes, change that, just change that, just change that. So I've had to impose on myself deadlines. This song has to be finished by then. And when that time comes around, save it and I won't go back. I've had to be quite hard on myself with that, because I love going back on it. Oh, yeah, just change this and just change that. And I think that the records that we listen to and we love them because the artists haven't been able to do that. And that I find very interesting. It's like, yeah, this could be better. Of course it could. I could change that kick drum for another one. I could put a counter melody in that B section, but I didn't. And that's what makes this what it is. Do you know Chic, the disco band? Those hits, Le Freak, I Want Your Love, all those tunes, they weren't finished songs. The label... the story goes. The label came to the studio when Nile Rodgers was making those songs. And they were like, oh, let's hear what you've been doing. And they were recording at the time down to half-inch tapes, taking those tapes to Studio 54, and they were being played out in the club to see if they worked. So they were putting these tracks onto 2 half inches and off they would go. And then a few weeks later, the label said to them, so we're going to put your album out on this date. And they went, what do you mean you're putting the album out on that date? They went, yeah, we've got all the tracks together. We're pressing it up. It's coming out. They said, but they're not finished. They were like, yeah, they're finished. We've been playing them out every night. People love them. And they took it out of their hands. The band had no choice. It was too late. And look at those songs. They weren't even mixed.
That's amazing. I saw Nile Rodgers in Cardiff like 3 weeks ago.
No way.
So this outdoor festival. And it was outstanding set list. You know, you just go, oh, for fuck's sake. You know, it's like, all right, I quit, you know. But what was remarkable, talk about finding something that's going to make people dance. Just use the word dance in your song. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like 90% of his songs have got a call to action to dance.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's Everybody dance.
Yeah. There were so many of them. He even worked on the David Bowie song that was on, which was Let's Dance.
It's like, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting way to come back round there. David Bowie, he said, and man, did I take this to heart and apply it to my process. he said, "I've only ever made records for myself." And I was like, wow, man, how wicked is that? That then he said, "I only make records for myself, and the fact that other people like them is a bonus." I was like, this is so brilliant. I'm going to apply that to what I do. And it's the case. If I don't like it, how can I imagine someone else will?
Yeah. And
maybe they will, and maybe I'll get lucky and they'll convince me it's good, but you can't rely on that.
And also, it's so important to have your voice, isn't it? And you know, whether you are an artist, whether you're a producer, a lyricist, a melody writer, whatever your job is in the session, to own your voice. And, you know, I know that I've got a shtick. I know what my shtick is now. And, you know, and people... Other people know, and Andrew Roachford heard one of my songs on the radio, or I can't remember what project it was on. He went, "Is that one of yours?" And I was like, "I was like, yeah." He goes, "Yeah, I could hear you all over it." Yeah. And now I just go, "Well, fuck it, that's it." You know, I'm not the coolest writer producer, but I know who I am, and I think that's.
But that makes you cool. That does make you cool.
Knowing who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the coolest thing in the world. That's what people want to buy into, isn't it? That you're, it goes back to what I said earlier about being authentic, you know?
That's brilliant. I love it. How much do you listen to current music right now?
All day long. I'm listening to new music. I can't consume it enough. I'm just so hungry for it. But I'm surrounded by young adults. I've got 5 kids, and they're all really into music. And so I'm hearing a lot of music from them, and they're hearing a lot of music from me. And that is really feeding its own little ecosystem of them discovering through me and me through them. So I'm consuming a lot of new music. And what I'm finding is that we're at a moment in time with writing and production where there's a massive gap between what I know and what they know. There's a big void in the middle of writers, producers, mixers, whom have fallen through the cracks where the industry changed, where the industry went from physical sales to this complete panic of, oh my God, there's no money in music anymore, to where we are now, which is there's tons of money in music. There's so much of it. It's you know, it's everywhere. And in that middle space where the industry panicked, so did studios, so did all of the passing on of the knowledge. I've been working with these guys from East London, and every time I say, "Have you heard this? Have you heard that?" they go, "No," and they write it down. And they come back the next day and they're like, "Man, I love that stuff you just switched me on to." And then I hear their music evolving. It's pretty special, man, to see what's going on with the young kids that are making music, because they really want to know from us big time. Because there is this void. You know, and fortunately, we're going to be around for quite a while to pass on this knowledge.
Yeah.
And what that's going to do to people that are coming up, you know, it's going to be amazing. When things align, you know, when, and that's what's wicked about being a mentor at the TSA, is when you are showing someone the way. And they know this bit, they know that bit, and they didn't know that, but you've given them that information and it goes click. All of a sudden they're like, "Oh man, I get it." And that's what I love about mentoring people, is seeing that light go on.
How important for you is like the opening lines, the first couple of lines of a song?
Really important, because they're going to do one or two things. The way that the words go together could be melodic. It could be keeping you in there, the way that they sit together. But equally, it could be what they say. So for me, it's about holding your attention. The first thing you say is really important, whether it's melodically or what you're saying. It's possibly the most important part, you might say. But what's really difficult is if you go in that high, you've got to keep it going. You've got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, to like I use the word consuming music. For me, I love listening to an album, put it on and wait for it to end and flip it over and play the next side. I love vinyl. I love listening to music in that way. Younger generations are not so into that. It's very niche for younger people to listen to music in that way. And I find when I'm with my kids or with younger singer-songwriters coming up, they don't listen to a whole song. And if they do, it's a massive banger of a tune. They might listen to just a minute and a half and then go, yeah, next, next, next. I mean, when I'm in the car with my kids and they've got control of the sound system, I'm like, okay, if you're in charge, you've got to play me the whole song, so you can't keep chopping from track to track. They still do, but I always say it, please leave the whole song, because you never know what's in there. You know, the middle eight's going to come around and then the outro chorus will have some ad libs. Things change, things evolve. And unless you let them, you're never going to know. So the first lyrics you hear, for me, are really, really important to keeping the listener engaged.
Yeah, yeah, I totally, totally agree. The book, chapter four, is called Have a Fucking Point, in which we discuss the merits of speaking simply in a song. Do you like being oblique with lyrics, or do you like stating it really clearly, you know, and this whole thing about, you know, having a point, do you think that's important? Because there's no right or wrong.
There is that's a good point. There isn't a right and a wrong. I like to take each song as an individual thing of its own, of it having a life of its own. So sometimes it could need a point, just like us. You know, I need to know what the answer to that is. I need to know what the point is. But then there are other times it's like, oh, it's sunny and I've got a smoothie and I'm going to sit in the garden, because that's the point. Go in and chill in the garden. That's the point. It doesn't have to say anything. It doesn't have to be an outcome. Sometimes there does, sometimes there doesn't. And that's quite a leads me to say this. Like, I've got, like you have, hundreds and hundreds of songs on my computer that no one's ever heard but me, and I'm really okay about that, because being a writer, producer, that's what makes me tick, is creating the songs. Everything that comes as by the by and part and parcel with that is a bonus. But making the music, that's for me, and I really enjoy that. What blows my mind is when, and it's a choice, when you choose to share that music with someone else or the public or a group of people, when you make that decision to share that with them, it has a life of its own you couldn't have imagined. You know, one person hears it, tells another person who tells 10 people, and it just goes, man. And I've seen this happen time and time again with my students here. I'm like, what are you going to do with that track? Don't know. How about you release it? Really? Yes, really. But it needs this, it needs that. No, it's ready to go. Come on, put that out. And then the next month, I have a mentoring session. They're like, wow, it's been played on the radio. These guys at this radio are asking me for the next one. It just starts to live a life that you couldn't have imagined it would live before until it's in the world. And that blows me away.
Jeff Nedzer, who is our guy in Canada that is VP of marketing for like four labels.
Yeah.
He says exactly what you do, Si, that it, when people say to him, oh, you know, I'm waiting for the right time to release it. And he just goes, it's now. Just get the damn stuff out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How much of a fan of rhyming are you in songs, in lyrics?
Big time. Love it. Love it. I mean, I could go far on that one. I love hip hop. I love hip hop so much because of the one, the authenticity of what's going on in someone's life and the message in that, but then the way it's put together, the way it flows and the way it moves. I love rhyming. And you know, going back from that's the extreme end of rhyming, rapping. Going all the way back to melody and the way that that flows together. Yeah, man. Rhyming's, it's a big one for me.
Do you think it helps the listener to remember it when you've got rhymes in there?
Yeah, I think so. For sure. Yeah. You know, poetry doesn't have to rhyme, but it's really nice when it does.
Yeah, there is a thing where somebody described it as like it feels like a full point, a full stop, a period point at the end of a sentence when you get a beautiful rhyme and it just goes kaboom, oh, we're done with that section.
Yeah,
you know, and we're on to a new thought then. And it's which I found a really interesting perspective on it. You know, it is almost a grammatical sort of ending, isn't it, to something just by having something rhyming.
Yeah,
you know,
it leads you there.
Yeah,
it shows you the way.
Yeah,
and it's like go this way, follow me, and we're there. Yeah. We've arrived. Yeah, I think I never looked at it like that, but it really is like that.
Yeah,
and I love that. Something that we are really fortunate about, that I didn't realize quite how fortunate we are as native English speakers, is that our language rhymes really easily compared to some others. And our language is also a lot more rudimental than others. So my soon-to-be wife, by the way, I'm getting married in 3 weeks.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. My soon-to-be wife is a French speaker. And living with her, the way she'll describe things and then have to translate it to English for me. She's like, oh, it's really hard to say this in English because in French there's so much more to what I want to say. It's the same with Italian. It's the same with Spanish. There's so much description in saying something that it takes the rhyme away. And in English, it's so simple to say what you want to say. It's so simple that it almost doesn't seem right.
That's hilarious. Love
and
it.
And when I'm talking with Italian students and Spanish students, and yes, sometimes French, they'll say, what do you think of my lyrics? Are they enough? Are they they write, and I'm like, yeah, they are. And it's, and I've discovered it's because of what I just said to you then. In their native language, it's so descriptive.
Yeah.
Like you and me, it could be like, what's it like outside? Oh, it's really nice. Done. We know it's really nice. That's enough of a description for you and me. But in French, it might be, yeah, it's so nice. There's the smell in the air and the clouds are doing this. And it's part of that way of talking and describing and communicating. And for us, it's much more rudimental.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles, she loves you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That said it all. It's so simple. And it rhymes and it's melodic and it's great.
What are the big highlight or highlights of your musical life? Those moments when you go, fuck, I didn't know this was going to happen when I first started making music.
Hmm. Yeah, that's Massive Attack, when they were making those records that we all know. It was to be, I was an assistant at the time and I was just into it. I was like, this is my tribe, this is my music. And I didn't think any further than in the moment of being in those rooms and hearing that music and just being like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then when those records came out and they became enormous, it was like, oh, I didn't see that coming. I was part of that. Just being in the room, you were part of that. And that's why I have the, when I'm in projects, if there's four people in the room and three of them are doing everything, it's a four-way split for me, because there's someone there. And if they weren't there, that wouldn't have happened. And that's what came from those sessions, witnessing those albums being made. It was, I didn't see that coming. Wow, that was magical what happened in that room.
It's a goosebump moment, isn't it?
But also, as well, like live, I was in a band years ago with these guys who were all coming out of the Royal Academy of Music, and there I was doing my thing. And I was blown away by these guys and what their abilities were as musicians. And we were playing a gig in Brighton at the Great Escape, just a tiny little venue. And right in the middle of the set, I was sat back. And I looked around at all of us, and everyone, we all looked at each other and we all thought, how are we making this sound? This is unbelievable. It's like all of us together are making this happen. How? And then after the gig, it was a conversation around that. It's like, when we played that tune, wasn't that the best we've ever played it? It was like, yeah, how did we do it? Don't know.
Yeah,
just the way it all sat together.
One sentence answer. Advice to newcomers in songwriting. What would your one piece of sage advice be to newcomers in songwriting?
Have fun. Enjoy what you're doing.
I love it. Thank you.
If you'd like to find out how we can help you on your path through the music business, come and talk to us at thesongwritingacademy.com.